Lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you, and good afternoon, everybody, and welcome back to the Interoperability Standards Priorities Task Force. I'm Mike Berry, I'm with ONC, and we're really happy to have you joining us again today. I'm going to open up our meeting and start with roll call, and I will begin with our co-chairs. David McCauley.
Good morning or afternoon, I guess it is mostly.
And Ariane Malik will be joining us shortly. Ricky Bloomfield.
Good morning, I'm here.
Oh, hello. Cynthia Fisher. Valerie Gray. Jim Gerges.
Present.
Edward June is not able to be with us today, but he will be back next week. Ken Kawamoto.
Morning or afternoon.
Victor Lee. Les Leonard. Clem McDonald. Jack Poe.
Here.
Raj Ratwani. Ram Sharam.
Present.
Sasha Termott.
Hello.
Hello, and Andy Truscott. All right, well, thank you, everybody, and I'll now turn it over to David to kick us off.
Okay. We're hoping Arian will join us in a couple of minutes. He let us know he's going to be a few minutes late, so we're going to get started without him. But he's really the driver of the production of our transmittal letter. I think everyone will recall our plan is to, over the next couple of meetings, refine our transmittal letter in document format, and then in time for the final presentation to the HITECH committee in June, we'll produce a set of slides that mirror the content of the transmittal letter instead of trying to do both of them at the same time or go from slides to letter, we'll go from letter to slides. And I think hopefully all of you got a copy of the draft that Arian and I put together over the weekend. I would say mostly Arian with some editing from me. I believe we got a few comments from several of you between Monday when that went out or Tuesday, whenever it was, and today, but we didn't hear from a whole lot of people, so I'm assuming that we'll get more feedback as we dive in today. So ONC, or Catherine, or whoever is driving the system, I believe you have the ability to show us the draft letter, a PDF of the draft. Yes. Why don't we bring that up to full screen? And I see Arian Visage.
Howdy. I am actually Arian on the phone as well, so we're all
okay.
Apologies for that.
We have both visage and voice. So Arian, we've queued it up for you. You want to drive us through the sort of first version of our transmittal letter?
Absolutely. So we've taken the PowerPoint work that we've done to date. We've taken the draft recommendations and all the feedback that we heard from you and tried to pour it into this transmittal. The way this works is that we have a standard form for transmittals. For those who haven't gone through the process before, the actual output is endorsed by the chairs of the HITECH and goes to Mickey Tripathi as the national coordinator. So structurally, this will end up being a set of recommendations from the HITECH to Mickey. So we're trying to format our work in that transmittal form. So if we go on to the next page, which I think is the table of contents, and then the next page after that, we go over the background. The background outlines our our charge, the legislative basis for our charge. So this comes out of 21st Century Cures. mandate to annually identify the priority uses of health information technology, identify existing standards and implementation specifications, and publish a report. So that's what we're doing. And then we list our charge. So this really comes directly from the charges that we got from ONC. And then I think David did a fantastic job of summarizing the hearings that we conducted. So if we can scroll down through there. Just gave a list of the hearings and presentation materials presentations that we received with links to the ISP task force calendar where all that information is available. And then after that, we get into the actual recommendations. I'm just going to pause there and see if folks have questions on information that should be in that upfront section. And then I'm going to make a sort of an editorial that the ICAD task force did something that I thought was really helpful. That we tried to format high-level recommendations as an executive summary of the overall report. But we might want to think about formatting an executive summary. If you read only one thing, read this, and then go read the details. So I'm just going to pause there, and for the upfront kind of front material, if there's any questions, comments, feedback on how this document is structured.
Arian, I have control over the scroll. You probably do too. So you may want to, it may be easier if you scroll to what you want us to look at.
Oh, gotcha. Thank you. Thank you.
Or tell me what you want me to scroll to, either way. But I think the presenters may have direct control.
Gotcha. Perfect. Okay. So one thing that we didn't cover as I'm looking over this is we didn't cover our prioritization process. We probably should cover our Delphi prioritization process and how we went about choosing our priority orders. If I'm thinking about somebody reading this who hasn't been through our deliberations, did we just come up with a random set of recommendations or what we end up doing. That might be useful. As I said, I think we should have a perspective about whether the high-level recommendations should get moved up into an executive summary section, and then we go into detailed recommendations. But other feedback from the task force in terms of things we could do to make this flow easier to read and more understandable by Mickey or other ONC staff and by the task force as a group or by future readers. Cool. Seeing no hands, I'll editorialize that I sometimes go back to standards committee or policy committee or high tech recommendations. And I'm usually really impressed that that those recommendations got something done that was really well done, and it's useful if you can pick the thing up and pretend that you haven't seen this in 5 years and pick the thing up and can you actually tell what it was we were trying to go do? All right, so now we go through the high level recommendation section, and here we summarize our detailed recommendations with a set of, let's see, 9 high-level recommendations. And as I said, I think this could go into an executive summary, but understanding that we're going to have a more detailed set of recommendations that are the nuts and bolts, it's useful to be able to pull some of the stuff out at a high level and make sure that somebody can read, one page or two pages and really get the gist of what it is that we're looking for. So our recommendations, number one, are recommendations to advance standards and implementation guidance in these four foundational areas of Firebase standards, CDS hooks, fire subscriptions, fire questionnaires, and fire consents. Number two, we recommend that ONC work with other federal stakeholders to move the nation toward an open and or freely available terminology standards that are designed to address multiple needs, clinical care, research, and administrative. And in areas where proprietary code sets are currently required, we recommend that ONC work with NLM and other federal stakeholders to either license codes nationally or transition the nation to more open terminology. Our third recommendation is on source normalization. So we recommend that ONC, in conjunction with other federal stakeholders, promulgate policy to ensure the data are captured in a normalized way as early to source as possible, and that federal stakeholders converge in common terminology standards where there's current divergence. And, you know, here's an area where we went into significant levels of detail in the detailed recommendation. We make recommendations on supporting the current work to align toward a common research model. We make recommendations on developing key standards implementation guidance to enable clinical research using EHRs. We make recommendations on mapping USCDI and FHIR to the common research model. So those are our research recommendations. We make recommendations on using the DaVinci standards, on supporting deployment of published standards implementation guidance that prioritize interoperability of key demographic and social determinant data. And then we make recommendations on burden reduction by advancing the recommendations of the ICAT task force and advancing next generation administrative standards via the ISAP. So that's our high level recommendation. I'll pause here to see if you were to read only one page of text, would this be an adequate summary of our overall deliberations? And clearly, I think this is not a question that's 100% answerable in the moment. This will serve a little bit as some of the homework assignment, but that's really the question I'd like to ask the task force is, let's make sure that we get to a good, adequate, executive-level summary of our recommendations and deliberations. So Clem has his hand up.
Yeah, it regards your second overall one, and I talked briefly with David about this. I think we should shoot higher and say that the vocabulary should be open and not bring in freely available, because that's ill-defined, first of all. You know, free for who, and is it, you know, for everybody, is it, and how? And let's see what we can get, where we can get to, rather than, I think the second word is a little wishy-washy, and it's not well-defined.
Sorry, the second word of?
Phrase, freely available.
Open or freely available. Okay. So Clem, your vote would be stick with open.
We're not going to get everything we want anyway.
Yeah.
But, you know, shoot high and then, you know, get what we can get.
That's a fair point. I think the set of, maybe we reserve the suggesting that NLM work on licensure as a fallback approach could go into the detailed recommendations.
Yeah, but even that one, I'm from NLM. I think we'd be better at saying a government agency or something than targeting NLM. It might, firstly, they're fussing. About some funding for some things.
That's a fair point. So rather than call out NLM as the agency, I'm thinking about that historically, that NLM has done the nation a service.
They still might do it. We reduce our targets if we focus on them.
Fair point. So let me just see if I can summarize, Clem, your feedback. Number one is we should observe that we have historically done the nation a service by adopting open standards for terminology and by building national licensing of those standards, or, you know, national payment for those standards, national funding for those standards. as a way of addressing the standards vocabulary maintenance sustainability issue. That's been a good working model. I think
So, did you capture that? What you do you know what you just said?
The transcribers did. I've got a limited ability sometimes to remember what it is I said out of my mouth at the moment that I said it. But that sounds like it captures the gist of what you're looking for.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Perfect.
Can I ask a question, Clem? This is David. When you say open, and maybe this is a little too detailed, but I just want to make sure I'm understanding what open means in your mind. These vocabularies may in fact need to have a rigorous control apparatus so that you don't just generate codes willy-nilly and that someone goes and, you know, makes sure that code is in fact a new code and makes sense, et cetera, et cetera. Is that consistent with your view of open?
Can it be well controlled and open at the same time? Yeah, it is tricky. There's a group that has agitated for open vocabulary. And I tried to get a document from them that would specify it, and it's not been written yet. So, you know, because you're right. But I think open means that people can submit to it freely, not necessarily get them in because you need that control, and that it means that it's. I don't know. I guess you got a good point, but people seem to have a feel for what it is, and I'll try to still get a real definition out of this group. It's three or four people, no, more than that. There's about six or eight in a member, including NCI and Melissa Handel, who's a big vocabulary person. But I didn't get one. They don't have it written.
Yeah, we actually heard from Melissa. I don't know if you were on that session. She spoke. She's superb.
She's intense. She's sort of a force of nature.
Yeah. I got that sense. The concern I have is, you know, producing something like SNOMED, for example, which I think would be a good example of a well-managed and highly controlled nomenclature, is expensive in the sense that it takes a lot of somebody's time, more than a few somebody's, probably a dozen or more. And if we capture the notion open, what it seems to me that what open means is that it's openly available. No one has to jump through a hurdle to use it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's free.
No, it's more than that. It's not just available. It's that it's not controlled that tightly that other parties can't.
We should probably fall back on the executive order text of standards organization, which there's some formal language around this that captures the intent. So there's actually two issues that are both necessary for the level of innovation that we're looking for in source code normalization or source terminology normalization that we're looking for. One is level of open standards, and again, there's terminology in the executive order that is the correct terminology that our ONC folks can help us dig up, which involves the process by which the terminology is maintained. The second is the national licensure that makes use of the terminology freely available by everybody in the U.S.
This may be a place where our executive summary has the high-level notion without a whole lot of detail, such as the phrase open, but our more detailed recommendations can talk about stepping stones to reduce licensing costs or eliminate licensing costs and things like that. I'm not sure we're going to solve the problem in our transmittal letter.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Agreed. Okay, let's move on. This is an important conversation. Any other feedback in terms of if you read just this one thing, would you get a good sense for what our recommendations were?
Well, Arian, I have to say you write pretty well.
Thank you.
I was really impressed by the document, the bigger, the longer document. I have still a couple quibbles about it, but it was smooth and clear.
No doubt. One of my dark traits is the ability to nail things down in ways that at least people can actively disagree with. And I definitely appreciate sometimes I can write in ways that are maybe a little too nuanced. I try to fit too much into a few words. And I really appreciate it when people come in, tear the words apart. So I think this conversation has been fantastic.
That's me. I'm his copy editor.
Well, way
more than that.
I gave effusive comments to David on the phone, and he said, no, that goes to Arian.
Yeah, well, it's true. It starts with Arian. Arian, we have an observation that number six is poorly worded, and I agree. We need to just it looks like we left out a word or two, so make a note of that one.
Perfect. Thank you.
It sounds like the start of the Constitution or something. We the people, in order to.
I tried to highlight the why before the what. But definitely there will be areas where there's some nuance that's missing. All right, let's go on to the next section. And I definitely would look for volunteers to help us craft the executive summary, and to have folks do copy editing and read for clarity and read for just flat out misunderstanding things or completely garbling things. So I definitely appreciate all the input. All right, let's go on to the next section, which is lists of specific recommendations.
Oh, and could I just clarify one more thing? I'm sorry, I didn't put my hand up also. But item seven, I just wanted to be sure. I wasn't aware that the gravity standards were strictly Da Vinci. You probably know, Arian, but I thought that they came separate.
That's right. That's correct. It's HL7. It's not
Da
Vinci.
It was incubated through Da Vinci, and it is now graduated to an HL7 group. That is absolutely correct. That's a great call out.
Okay.
Thank you. Okie doke. Let's go on to the next section, foundational standard prior. This mostly replicates the summary. I'm not sure there's a lot of additional detail beyond the summary here, just maybe a few more words. Sasha had a good set of feedback here where she pointed out that CDS hooks is the most mature of these four. And so we probably should put some color in our recommendations or findings relative to, you know, CDS hooks has been under development the longest and is the most ready, and the other three require more support for development, testing, production use for broader adoption. So that might be a useful comment back to ONC. But, you know, again, the sense of the task force is these four standards are foundational in the sense that getting national adoption here would help us solve a wide range of downstream problems. So I'll pause there.
This is Sasha. And Arian, great summary of my email. I agree. That would be a helpful way to clarify it for ONC and our feedback. One question that came up internally as I was seeking some additional feedback here, there was some ambiguity as to what fire consent work we were referring to. Is there a specific implementation guide that this recommendation is centered around? just to alleviate ambiguity?
So that's a great question, and I'm not going to be the expert here. I looked at the fire consent directive or the fire consent resource, which includes a privacy consent directive, medical treatment consent directive, research consent directive, and advanced care directive. So I was looking at the consent resource, which I think is called consent.
I think it's just called consent, right?
Consent.
I stuck a link in the chat. Is that what we're both looking at?
That's exactly, let me just look at the link in the chat. That is exactly what we're both looking at. So that's an oopsie on my part, and that really should be fire consent resource as the thing that we're looking at.
Okay.
And if I can add that the place where it got most airtime in our deliberations was just fairly much in passing, but nonetheless, importantly, in passing with the gravity discussion and the need to capture permission to share social determinants with institutions in the community that could help someone who may be need some assistance. So I think that's where it got surfaced as an important capability that would support the health equity. So
yep.
We could maybe tie that link in here.
That's right. It has an obvious application for pragmatic research, in the sense that if you're performing prospective research with randomization. Depending on IRB, you also very likely need to capture additive consent, and it would be useful to be able to capture the output of that more formally. Clem has his hand up.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. I didn't have my hand up.
Good. Thank you. Sasha, does that demystify your confusion, which was entirely mine?
Yes, that is helpful. Thank you.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. Let's go. Oh, yeah, Clem's hand is going up and down. So
it's going up. I mean it to be up now.
Okay, good.
It's on this maturity level. I think it would be worth, it would be worth looking at what they're formally calling the maturity levels of these four things just before we make a hard decision. I understood the questionnaire might go to normative this summer, but I've heard that before. But I don't know how to find hooks. Is it a resource to find its maturity?
Yeah, David, I wonder if you know offhand where CDS hooks lives in the FHIR hierarchy. I'm familiar with where it lives in the Argonaut hierarchy.
Not currently. I've not looked at it in more than a year, so it could have moved around. I mean, it's an implementation guide because it pulls in standards other than just FHIR. It's a higher level construct because it uses OAuth and a variety of non-HL7 capabilities to deliver an overall service. But it has been balloted through HL7 for sure. So the core IG gets an HL7 process associated with it. At least that's the way it was.
This has been demystified in chat. Ken placed the HL7 hook to CDS hooks in the chat. It's cds-hooks.hl7.org. And Sasha sort of re-endorsed that. So we want to make sure that we're pointing out to that. So, it's HL7 CDS hooks. It's a published specification for clinical decision support. And as David notes, it's an implementation guide that operates over multiple HL7 resources.
Right.
We may want in this section to just footnote each of the standards referenced to alleviate ambiguity.
Thank you.
Which of them are supported in the that a consortium of informatic systems, I think you're involved with, Aaron, you know, that has is going forward and including things that are a subset of FHIR. I've gone blank on the name. It's the
Argonaut?
Which ones are an Argonaut? Because I think that gives it a little more strength.
Yeah, as Ken notes, the actual HL7 CDS hooks provides hook maturity. So the hooks, there's the hook spec itself, which is STU, and then there are hook maturity items that are of various levels of hook maturity. So that's the places where you can place a CDS workflow into an EHR.
But is consent in Argonaut? That's how it's kind of
consent
going.
Consent is in HL7 at a level 2 level of maturity. So again,
I suspect
to Sasha's point, we will make sure that we put in so it's trial use. So we will make sure that we put in links to the actual implementation guides or resource guides, as well as making appropriate overall comments on maturity.
Arian, a broader comment. I think the way the ISO works is to categorize interoperability priorities, and then underneath a priority to catalog relevant standards, some of which may be at different maturities. I think we need to make sure that our wording here, and I think we're pretty close, our wording identifies the priority that we're trying to address by nominating a particular standard. Does that make sense? So
that makes exactly sense. I think I tried to capture this, which is we tried to list the oh, you're right. Thank you. So it's in the recommendation text where I got this wrong. Great point, and let's make sure that we address that.
Yeah, and it's just a subtlety, but it allows for the notion that, you know, the standard could fail to become adopted, but the priority still exists.
Right. Or in our quantum computing standards, we take the same priority and we address it through superposition of spin states. Cool.
Supremacy.
All right.
Our supremacy.
Exactly. We will move on from this section. We got a lot of great feedback here. So foundational standards on common data models. Again, we tried to, in these sections, separate findings from recommendations. So our main findings were that the deployed EHR based in the U.S. was used for retrospective research supporting therapy and treatment planning. There's a lot of work that was required, and most of that work was based on lossy normalization of technology and extraction of clinical events that often required multiple remappings that were sometimes lossy, bulk FHIR, while potentially useful for research extracts, required remapping from the person-centered implied graphs of FHIR to the more relational style modeling. That's our findings. And then Clem, I got your hand, so I'll get to you as soon as I just sort of verbally cover the overview and recommendations. Our recommendations are to continue to map US CDI to HL7 FHIR, build a roadmap, which I think we'll do in conjunction with our US CDI work group colleagues, to expand US CDI to incorporate research and administrative needs. And we put in the really important point that Clem brought out last time, that we're not by this asking for clinical capture or administrative data capture to be the primary driver for EHR workflows, but rather to make sure that EHR clinical capture has maximal impact on research and administrative needs. We recommend that ONC work with industry stakeholders to map US CDI to broadly disseminated research data models. And we make more specific recommendations on vocabulary and more specific recommendations on EHR data use and administrative burden reduction. Now, with that summarized, Clem, over to you.
I'm not sure I really do have a comment. I was responding to the first draft. It's different now in your recommendation. I don't see anything. Yeah, you're just talking about USCDI. Previously, I was worried that we're going to end up with a war between common data models and end up with a fifth version.
Yeah.
You know.
You'll see this as well. So this is Les was particularly vocal about this as well. You'll see the clarification specifically in that area on in the research section. And then we made pains not to overly wave a red flag on, you know, OMOP as the surviving standard, just to let the work that's going on right now be better supported. And Clem, we took a lot of your feedback in terms of this work's going on right now. What's needed is funding. So let's make sure that we resource the alignment the appropriate way.
Right. Okay. Perfect.
Any other comments on this section?
Arian, a question that runs the risk of opening a rabbit hole that we don't want to go down, but did we have any discussion about the broader EHR export capabilities that go beyond the bulk fire, the required EHR dump? Is there any need to mention the possibilities of working towards making that standards-based, or is that just way out of scope? I don't remember if we talked about it. You know what I'm
about it. I think the implied assumption was that since bulk fire was already had a track for certification and requirement, that we didn't need to wade in.
Okay.
That was, again, it was dangerous implied assumptions. So I don't know if there's anybody in the task force who believes that we should say something different there. Clem, go ahead.
Well, as I'm following David's lead, you know, the current specification is really blah. You have to be able to export it, but who knows how. It wouldn't hurt to say it might be not horrible to get that more standardized. I don't know, Dave. You brought it up.
I mean, I think that everyone's hope and I believe the intent behind the requirement is that bulk fire would be the way this is accomplished once everybody is required to support it in later 2021, whatever the date is. But in the meantime, it's raw data dumps from the various vendors and other sources that are actually being used. And we're not, either we focus and say the future should make sure that bulk fire is sufficient to address the needs of the research community. Maybe that's the way to do it, admits that right now it's not.
Well, and the dump wasn't intended just for research.
No, it isn't. It wasn't. But I think that's essentially what happens today through, I mean, every vendor has a different way of doing it, some more organized than others. But it's not bulk fire that's being used.
Right. But we do have a track to normalize to bulk fire. I thought I heard Sasha trying to elucidate this topic.
Oh, yes. I guess so. When we've talked about this in the EHR Trade Association, EHRA, we've talked about sort of the vision that the expansion of USCDI over time would obviously then cover an increasing amount of all electronic health information and aspirationally eclipse the need for the more generic EHI export, because we'd have, you know, standards we'd come to consensus on for all of that data. But I guess, David, when you suggest, you know, should we suggest standardizing the EHI export in advance of, I guess, coming to consensus on FHIR standards for all electronic health information, what would standardizing EHI export look like?
Yeah, I think we've answered our question here.
Well, and let me just respond to Sasha particularly, because I think once I said something and realized what I said, I now think it through again. And I think what my intent would be is to say that the expansion of USCDI and the expansion of bulk fire would address the research community so that there's no need to rely on unformatted or unstandardized EHR dumps. Does that resonate okay with
what it sounds
you,
like
Sasha?
We should say, yeah, go ahead, Sasha.
Oh, I agree. I think that makes sense. We would want to, factor in the research community's feedback into the expansion of USCDI to make sure that their needs are considered along with the other stakeholder groups that are feeding into USCDI expansion.
So it sounds like it would be a helpful comment in the recommendations or in the findings section to note that we assume that expansion of USCDI is accompanied by corresponding expansion of fire export capabilities that will enable broad support of those export capabilities for research purposes.
That's
a core assumption.
Built into the way
we're not
bulk fire is in certification today, the way it sort of hinges on that. So I think that is the current state, but yes.
Yeah, okay, good. Clem?
I picture USCDI specifying code systems, and that doesn't get us all the way there. In fact, it's specification for three different structures in HL7. So I think it also needs some specification on how the structure is. And, of course, bulk fire would do it, but I'm not trying to pick an approach. I just don't think it's saying USCDI is going to cover it all.
Yeah.
It's just code.
USCDI is typically conceptualized as data classes and accompanying vocabulary standards, which isn't quite a model and certainly isn't a representational construct. So we typically think about USCDI as saying the what relative to constraints on interoperability or requirements for interoperability, and then we think about HL7 or CDA implementation guidance as the representational how. So USCDI has more than just the vocabulary standards because it does describe data classes and in effect fields in those data classes.
Not very well because we're always fussing about adding one. Take one field out of the registration record and that's USCDI. But anyway, I don't want to pursue it, but I don't think it's enough to say the growth of USCDI will solve the export problem.
Yeah. So I think the statement that we're making is as USCDI expands to include more data classes, those data classes will be represented in bulk fire export. And at least with respect to that expansion of data classes, that data will be more available for research needs. Again, it doesn't predispose that you won't need to go back and do some custom work on the side.
It's a good question to bring up with the USCDI task force. I know, Arian, you had talked about having a joint meeting with them at some point to go over our recommendations. I think this question is important enough to, if we have that meeting.
Yep, I don't think we're going to be able to get a meeting before closing the recommendations, but certainly it'll be one of the takeaways for after. Okay, let's go on to the next section on terminology, the most fun section. I think we've already taken note of being explicit about what we're asking for, making sure that we have a distinction between open in terms of process and freely available in terms of national licensing, and as a goal that is across all needs. So that's recommendation number one. And then we go through various recommendations for LOINC coding. I think there was a comment, Clem, it may have come from you, that we got through email, or maybe it came from Sasha. My memory is all scrambled right now. On this issue also applies to to radiology and other kind of imaging reporting.
That was me.
Okay.
And I retract the comment. We were internally swirling, and I mistook something that was actually about ordering, which I know we're not addressing with this recommendation, and applied it here. So I retract my comment on
Okay. Yeah, totally acknowledge that point, which is right on, which is the orderable catalog needs to accompany both laboratory and radiology orderables. Okay. We recommend that ONC, through conjunction and coordination with CMS, harmonize procedural coding standards. This is one that is worth people looking at and making sure that we've worded appropriately. For clarity, this is not intended to be an anti-X statement, but a pro-Y statement, if that makes sense. So we're not trying to say that terminology standard X is bad. We're trying to say that approach Y is good. And it would be desirable policy for current terminology standard X to be compliant with policy Y. Go ahead.
A little bit. I can't quite read it, and it's not the same as the draft.
Yeah, this is one that we tried to wordsmith appropriately, so that we're not saying X is bad, but we're saying Y is good.
But I can't quite see your text.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's split over. So we recommend that ONC directly and through coordination with CMS harmonize procedural coding standards to open and freely available, which will replace that by our chosen language for what we intend. And again, cross-mapped internal standards. Again, we'll cross-map that to the policy, the sort of controlling policy statement. And then we note that that outcome could be done by licensing existing coding standards for national use and cross-mapping to international standards, or could be done by building a roadmap for transition.
We probably want to qualify the word licensing there to say broad licensing or something.
Yep. Yeah, again, I think what we want to do is make sure our policy statement is really clearly written and then refer back to our policy statement in this bullet. And again, just for purpose of clarity, we're not saying blow up CPT as an example, CPT-4 as an example. We're saying it would be a good idea if ONC and other federal stakeholders, including CMS, could work with terminology developers to transition terminology standards to follow the policy norms that we've outlined. Clem, go ahead.
Yeah, well, there's a couple things. The word licensing, because I don't know if literally LOINC has there's a license, but no one has to. Yeah, maybe it's fine. There's licensing, yeah. But there's some other words. There's no mention of the unit standard, which I think was supported in the other committee. Because if you don't have something on units, researchers can't use the numbers very well. You know, and we're looking at a lot of units in two or three different huge systems,
yep.
And the inventiveness of unit strings is beyond belief.
UCOM standardization, which I forget the status of UCOM. I think UCOM's actually already incorporated in LOINC, so it's already included by reference in USCDI.
Well, it's incorporated. They're going to incorporate, I think, but more important, it's in all the standards. It's in the HL7, it's in FHIR. That's the way it gets incorporated if you get into reference. But
okay.
So that's one. And there's another thing that might be worth mentioning, another HL7 standard, LIBID, which specifies the mappings from instrument codes to LOINC and SNOMED when there's a codable answer.
Yep.
And that actually is where all the new COVID tests showed up within a couple of days during that period. So just mentioning some of those, and I would also mention ICD-11, which is certain to become the mortality standard, and there's a lot of support to make it the morbidity standard. People should be aware of it anyway. It's not that it's ICD-10, it's got big problems. ICD-11 has got far fewer problems. And for research, it's going to be adopted at, you know, almost everywhere.
Gotcha. I think we're good on ICD-11, unless there's other things we want to say in this ICD-11 paragraph. What I'm hearing you say is that in this source coding issue, I'm having some artifacts caused by Adobe, but in the source coding, we want to also note not just Link, but UCM.
UCM, and yeah. And
okay.
Well, you should probably name names. No, it's Snowman, too.
Yep, that's right. Yeah. Snowman for microbiology.
Yeah.
Yep, got it. Cool. Thank you. Okay. And then the last one let's continue to harmonize NDC to RX norm, treating RX norm as a source terminology, and make sure that we use RX norm as a single source across all these workflows, which I think as is often the case, the major obstacle here is agencies within HHS lining up their work. All right.
Could we throw FDA is sort of a little bit, there's two issues in terms of focus on international standards.
Mm-hmm.
It uses the WHO's drug codes, which is an international standard too. I mean, I'd savor what you're saying about RX norm, but just want to make sure we're not colliding in our thinking about international standards. And then the other one is whether we could encourage FDA to use RX norm.
That's what we're saying here. So I think the WHO, correct me if I'm wrong, Clem, I think the WHO issue is related to generics, where there's a WHO terminology for standardization of generics and for compounds. That's where the international alignment comes in place, rather than on sort of the normalization of that to U.S. brands.
Well, our pharmaceutical affects generics too.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want to make too much point of it, but it'd be nice if we could nudge the FDA, who's a U.S. organization.
Right. That's right. Just to draw that thread out, Clem, so the FDA already does work to make sure that we name the generic names in accordance with international standards to make sure that we don't have, you know, the acetaminophen paracetamol confusion that we have for legacy stuff. And that naming process is also the right process for aligning on RX norm. But also lot numbering and lot tracking and all that good stuff that happens at the NDC level that we want to map over to RX norm.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Thank you. All right. So that's that section. That's a fun section. That's a section with a lot of detail. Gravity. That was the one task force meeting that I missed. So I sort of waved hands on findings on gravity, so looking for volunteers to help out. There's somebody on the Public Health Data Systems Task Force, I think it's the representative from Washington State, who does not believe that the CDC terminology set is appropriate for race and ethnicity, and I've been trying to capture information on why that person does not believe it's maybe I'll do some private correspondence to Bryant. But I think we're stating that the USCDI terminology for race, for sex, race, ethnicity, and addresses. So race, ethnicity, this was a masterful piece of work that the Standards Committee did back in the day of saying the minimum is OMB codes mapped to CDC codes as the controlling terminology. But that's a that's a top-level hierarchy that allows for coding at multiple levels. So, for example, CDC does a nice job of deconstructing those top levels down to the national race and ethnicity groups that allow for example, tracking a disease outbreak to people in the Hmong community as opposed to, you know, sort of the broad level Asian classification. So, as I said, I think there's somebody out there who thinks that that code set is inadequate, but we're saying that it's adequate. The problem is it's not actually, the data doesn't flow through interoperability in the way that it should. And in the meeting today, this morning, Clem and I were pointing out the issue that in lab ordering, oftentimes what happens is it's just the analyte information that flows, or in other cases for commercial labs, it's analyte and insurance information that flows, and we're not actually using a spec like LOI and flowing through the contact and demographic information. So I think what we're calling for here is let's make sure that when we get it captured, it's actually flowing appropriately downstream so that it can be, so that we can monitor data for disparities. So I'm going to pause there. Those are our two major recommendations. And then our last one is continued harmonization on patient address. And I missed the bolding for the task force recommends on the second recommendation. Clem. Clem, your hand is up. I don't know if you're on mute.
Oh, yeah, I am on mute. If we could put in URLs, link in URLs whenever we name these things. So the thing you're talking about, CDC is in Sinbad and things. I mean, then that would make it more, people want to understand it, could be do it easier. And I don't think it costs much in space if you just put a link underneath the words.
Great almost point. All, yeah, I would point for this one, I'd point over to USCDI that cross-references the Sinbad's CDC standard.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the problems with people criticizing the CDC standards, they don't look below the top five. You know, it goes all the way down to Indian tribes. It's got like 30 Indian tribes in it.
That's exactly my point. If you stop at the OMB categories, I think you might have a point. But if you actually look at the full terminology set in CDC, it's hard to see where you've got a concern. So I wonder whether Bryant in the state of Washington, I think it's the state of Washington, I think that might be where he has a concern.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so let's bold this. Let's make sure we got the cross link over, and otherwise, any other feedback here? And then I'd love for volunteers who were actually at the gravity hearing to put in the findings section.
This is Sasha. Just a question. The top paragraph says USCDI terminology with proposed additions for gender identity and sexual preferences. When we make a recommendation below to exchange demographic information, are we encompassing the additions of gender identity and sexual preferences, which I'm not sure are part of all the standards? Or do we mean just sex, race, ethnicity, and address?
Yeah, so that's a good point. I think we're saying that when those fields are standardized, they should also flow.
Okay. That makes sense to me, and I'm supportive. Maybe we could adjust the wording so that there's not ambiguity.
Yep. Appreciate it.
And what would flow when fully standardized? I mean,
the USCDI task force made recommendations to the national coordinator that the gravity standards should be included in USCDI and that we should add terminology sets for gender identity and sexual preference, which if you remember, David, back in the day, we had a good long discussion in the standards committee and made the same recommendations to the national coordinator at the time. And so I think we're saying with respect to those ads that when they are adopted by USCDI, they also should be included in implementation guides for interoperability such that they at that time flow. I think Sasha's rightly worried about some of the implications of it should flow, but we have no interoperability space for it to flow.
But to whom is some of this flowing? I'm sensitive to the privacy concerns here.
Yeah,
it may not be consented interchangeable data.
In other cases, we've looked at minimum necessary as the controlling language here, and that's a particularly thorny topic. So maybe we should say where appropriate.
Yeah, I mean, I think for public health purposes, you know, the address information that's currently often missing is clearly something that shouldn't be missing, but I'm not sure sexual preference and gender identity is something that should automatically be assumed to flow.
It depends.
Yeah.
Right? It clearly depends.
Doesn't it depend on what the person wants?
It also depends on what the person wants. That's exactly right. So these are all particularly thorny issues, I'm thinking that maybe the language of where appropriate is would be something that we could add here. Okay, Clem, go ahead.
Well, one of the thorny parts is most of the interest in adding these data elements comes from the community, that same community that has those data elements. And yet, you know, I can expect there's a lot of sensitivity to that stuff being passed around. So I think it's a thorny is maybe not enough of a strong enough word. But
yeah, there's a strong desire to make sure that we're using gender identity appropriate words or sexually orientation appropriate words. There's also a strong desire to make sure that data doesn't inappropriately flow where it's not supposed to flow. So,
The irony is that, like, for in terms of a race, at least in some hospitals and institutions, they don't get collected, and it's not because they don't have a field for it. It's because the people who are collecting or answering don't want to ask that question. I think it'll be a similar thing with these issues.
No doubt. So, no doubt. All right. So definitely point taken that we need to be sensitive about the wording here and not imply that sensitive data should be flowing in cases where it's not appropriate for it to flow. Let's go on to our next section. Let me do a time check. Okay, so I think we've got 15 more minutes before public comment, 14 more minutes before public comment. I think we can get it done. EHR data use for research, real-world evidence, recovery-like trials, comparative effectiveness, list of specific recommendations. I think that list of specific recommendations is actually a typo. And we probably should use less is pragmatic trials language here. So our findings are that although the U.S. has the largest deployed base of electronic health records, UK did the lion's share of prospective pragmatic trials for treatment for COVID-19. Many U.S.-based institutions invested in research data models to perform broad observational analyses, multiple research models, lack of source normalization as significant issues. And David, as I'm reading this, you and I talked about how I think our observation was that our number one problem by far was source code normalization or source normalization that required substantial amounts of rework. Number two was making sure that interoperability, USCDI and FHIR specifications were mapped to research needs where appropriate. And then number three is, you know, the multiple data models issue. So I just want to make sure that people understand the degree of pain that, if you had one thing to go solve, it would be source normalization by far, and everything else is a distant second. So we need to make sure that that's included there. We make, David, I think you're scrolling. Is that right?
I moved it down just to,
cool.
It seemed like you were talking more about recommendations.
Yeah, now we're moving to recommendations. So number one is really memorializing Clem's good feedback from last meeting that our intent is to reduce the effort needed to reuse clinical data for research needs, not to prioritize research needs over clinical care as a primary task for deployed EHRs. We recommend that ONC support the catalog of common research models and work with stakeholders to evaluate, develop, and harmonize to a common foundational research model mapped to the US CDI and cross mapped to FHIR. We're primarily calling for the community to reduce duplicative deployed models rather than creating meta models to cross map between existing models, which, boy, is a mouthful to even say, but to do is even more of a mouthful. We recommend that ONC work with FDA, CDC, CMS, federal healthcare providers, NIH, NCI, and other federal actors to harmonize the common research data model. And we make specific recommendations relative to consent, prospective randomization, separation of research clinical data, terminology for pre-approved new chemical entities, biologics and devices, and other EHR, my little Sasha bells ring in here, not gaps, but, other areas where EHRs could better support research. So I'm going to pause
here. I put opportunity in there. I thought that was
opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah, it's in there.
Yeah, it's just not here. It's just not in that bullet. Clem, go ahead.
Oh.
Yeah, I want to clarify when you talk about standardizing source data. Are you talking about going upstream as high as you can?
Exactly.
It doesn't come across. That's the only
problem. We'll do another path to make sure that we get that done right. But it's basically, look, if your lab is sending you proprietary lab codes, your research life is going to be unpleasant no matter what you do. Whereas if you're...
There's all kinds of parts to it. You know, you get people do send outs, and the referral labs mostly have standardized codes, and they don't carry them. I mean, so it's not just doing it at the top, but using it, taking advantage of it.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. And the last incarnation of the ISP task force went into, as you remember, Clem, went into particularly depth on this topic. So we might want to reference back that report specifically for LOINC. Okie doke. No other comments. Harmonization of clinical administrative data for burden reduction, and again, waived hands here, so this requires a little more work. I was getting tired by this time. So we endorse the ICAT task force recommendations as expressed in the high-tech transmittal. We recommend that ONC add sections to the ISTA to track relevant interoperability priorities, and track items being addressed to the Extant, DaVinci, FastFire, X12, and CPDP, as well as the 8-7 Fire Accelerator projects. And we recommend that ONC harmonize the implied administrative data model expressed in X12 and in CPDP administrative transactions to US CDI to ensure that EHR clinical data captures maximally available to address administrative needs at low patient and clinician burden. All right. Questions there. Cool. And then our last one.
No, I don't really have a question. But I do want to comment on the X12. It has been fairly cooperative with HL7 over the last 10 years, but some of the stuff they've done has never made it out the door, I think, to CMS for some reason. But it's a tricky space.
The ICAD task force recommendations, which I'd encourage people to read, went into some significant depth on that particular topic, recommending that we build a more flexible standards evolution process that encompasses administrative transactions for exactly that reason, that there's a lot of deployed work in the standards community that has never been deployed in practice, primarily because of federal policy being somewhat slower moving. One could point to attachments as a classic example there that I think has been just about to be ready for prime time or ready for prime time since early 2000s. All right. And then we make recommendations relative to situational awareness, recommending that ONC list situational awareness priorities in the ISA and list SANER as well as related standards, work with stakeholders and pilots in early implementation, evaluate mature standards for broader adoption. And then I think we heard very clearly in the, which probably should go into the findings, we heard very clearly that one of the major issues here is a policy coordination issue, that there, as in many areas of this space, we don't have aligned policy incentives and funding mechanisms to ensure that where standards are available, they're actually deployed and operational in case of emergency. All right. So we got through the whole document. At this point, I would like to remind everybody that we're looking for volunteers for each of these sections. So we're looking for volunteers, particularly for the executive summary, as well as some of the upfront material, the front material on charge and status of hearings at the like. So this is the material of, if we synthesize out the detailed recommendations to something that somebody reads only one page of or two pages of, let's make sure that's right. And then we're looking for by section volunteers for each of our major sections. And, you know, I think Sasha's already volunteered, but we're looking for additional volunteers for each of these sections. We will, if you're a volunteer, what we'll do is we'll work with you on refining the text of each of these sections for full task force consideration. So, you know, you get extra work and extra homework, but it's going to go directly into making sure that this text is as clean as it possibly can be. And then, as always, we will review these any changes in the full task force pursuant to in the meeting before the full advisory committee getting to a final set of recommendations that we'll bring to the advisory committee. So questions on process and what homework we're looking for folks to do. Just one other meta comment. We're going to be working off the transmittal draft up until the last meeting. And on the last meeting, we will abstract probably from the high-level recommendations or the executive summary out slides that lists the recommendations and recommendation text for delivery to the full advisory committee. I think we're in great shape. I think we got a pretty solid draft. Clearly out of this meeting, we've gotten a lot of really good feedback that'll go back into another good draft that'll be sent out to the full task force for your consideration for review in the next meeting. Any other comments? All right. So I wonder whether, if appropriate, we could go to public comment 15 minutes early.
Oh, we sure can. Operator, can we open up the line for public comments?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your line from the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up the handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments. There are no comments at this time.
All right. Well, I think then what we'll do is give everybody back 13 minutes of their day, and we'll take the feedback from this task force meeting, send out a revised draft as early as possible, and just logistically, sometimes the way this works is David and I work on it tomorrow, and if we don't get it out by the end of day, East Coast time, it may come out on we may keep working it over the weekend, then it'll come out on Monday. So expect by Monday, no later, to get a revised draft. If you have a particular desire to participate in more active wordsmithing, please volunteer. Otherwise, be prepared to read and review the draft on Monday and show up on Thursday ready to tear it apart. Cool. Thanks, everybody.
Good job.
Thanks.